Yesterday, we talked to an astronaut and a person who made a documentary film about Star Trek people. Like, that should be the highlight of a week, right? That's the high watermark in anyone else's show. And did you see a little certain someone on Twitter get a little envious of our guests?
It makes me happy because then it means like you're striving for better for yourself.
We had a master distiller who left a forest castle to go join the circus.
Yeah, so don't tell me you can't go out on your own and pursue your dreams. You can, because Marianne Eves, the first master distiller since Prohibition, did it. First female master distiller since Prohibition. And now she runs around with the circus.
And she runs around with also the guy who runs a circus, the fiercely attractive but also probably intelligent Kevin Vernardos, who runs the Vernardos Circus.
Very intelligent, articulate, and super talented.
Also
what a
attractive.
Singing voice.
Yep.
And at 22, he was a ringmaster for Ringling Brothers Circus. He's the
youngest
good.
Ringmaster.
I was ringmaster of nothing at all.
Man, push lions around. Yeah. There's so many things to ask. And there's a baby on the show today.
Hi, everyone. Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz. Welcoming you to The Backpack Show. Your hosts, Chris Brogan, Kerry Gorgone, Boom Shakalaka.
Backpack Show.
Boom! Watch my own show on Twitch.
Oh, do you see?
Get right over there.
Some people. My man Michael Doherty's here, and Elizabeth, Chloe, my parents, my biological father, and his wife.
You're so funny because everybody wants to run away and join the circus. Everybody.
When Scott Simon asked that question, I sort of winced because I have that feeling that that's like such a. But then Marianne did it. You know, Marianne had. We just interviewed her. Like, she's not even done being in the news.
She was
in the news for like, I'm going to go to a forest castle.
But we got her before the New York Times. I just want to say.
That's true. We did get
And her. I have wanted to talk to Marianne Eves since like probably 3 or 4 years ago. I've been trying. So it took Jason Falls in Kentucky to hook that up for me.
That was so important. Chip Griffin has a question. Looking out the window right now, it's actually partly cloudy. There will be showers in Massachusetts a little later today. It's very cloudy, though, and the high is right now 51 degrees. It's going to drop down to 38.
You're such a weirdo. Welcome to the Backpack Show.
I worked for the phone company.
What, beat your chest?
Yeah. So when there would be big outages and I was the call guy on the repair service line, I would say things like, New England Telephone Repair Service, this is Bob. Can I have the area code telephone number you're reporting from? And they'd be like, are you in a helicopter? Yes, I am. I'm out of Cape Cod right now. I'm somewhere over Harwich near, and I would always say a Shell station. And they'd go, oh my God, I live near the Shell station. Like, because everyone lives near a gas station.
Everyone also lives near Cumberland Farms. I used to pretend, I'd pick up the phone and pretend it was Cumberland Farms if a guy got my number and I didn't want him to have it. Because once in a while, like your friends will give out your number.
That would never happen.
I'd be like, Cumberland Farms.
Nice.
Yeah, I know.
I'm into it.
So circus or bourbon?
I'm going liquor first, okay. You know, because I want to savor my experience with Kevin.
Man, you don't even know everybody. He was so man crushing in the green room.
No, it was embarrassing. Totally normal.
Yes.
Completely, nearly heterosexual.
It was bromance, but like one-sided. It was a little.
It's a little awkward.
I mean, come
He's
on.
New to us. You know, I got to warm him up. Let's grab Marianne and see what happens. Hello. How are you?
Marianne's muted.
You're muted because reasons.
Sorry. Hi.
Hello.
Good morning.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
New York Times spread is ridiculous. It's crazy.
Really, really excited to see how it all came out. I was also super nervous about making sure that my work week made me look cool enough. And it just so happened we picked a good week. I'm just kidding.
That's what I always say. When I had my website redone, I was like, just make me look cool. And Chloe Forbes Kinlan did it. Some people just know how to make magic.
So we've had you on to talk about your working in a castle. And now we're doing something different because some changes happened and there are some shifts in what went on. But also now you're in this lifestyle where you're in a 46 foot fifth wheel and traveling the world and making liquors and stuff like that. What exactly do you do right now with Eves?
So I'm a spirits consultant. So I support the production of clients globally now, and I work on creating new products, updating processes, creating you know, our my own ventures in this tasting program and some brands that'll be launching in 2022. But yeah, all kinds of different things.
Okay, I see. So these shenanigans at Eve's Blind, this is coming, and this is going to be crazy. And this thing is like the fanciest liquor labels I've ever seen in my life. But what you're also doing is, I don't know, somebody like Ryan Reynolds calls you and says, hey, can you swing on by? Because we don't know what we're doing. That kind of a thing.
Precisely. Yeah. Okay. And it doesn't even have to be Ryan Reynolds. Like, I would consider, you know.
You take the call from other people, possibly. Someone that I...
And all of those have childproof caps. So if you're hearing a baby in the background, don't be concerned. She'll never be able to break into that stuff.
I was going
to
say, can we get that out of the way? We just got to see the babies.
Because, so. you know people are going to want to see. So she needs to be quite a change.
She's the best.
Quite a change. So absolutely. What was your vision? Did you feel like what drove you to go out on your own?
Baby. I need to be up.
I love babies. That's okay. Pick her up. It's all right.
She walked away. So, you know, I had been working at Castle and Key for about 4 years. And the last year, I really started thinking about my personal brand and my career and where I wanted to go. And I felt like having the opportunity to get out into the world a little bit more, see some other types of spirit categories do distilling in other places would really benefit me, you know, to give me a deeper level of the full spirits industry. You know, I did work for Brown-Forman, so I got a small picture of a lot of different spirits from kind of one vantage point. But it's been incredible. You know, even just seeing the diverse production across the U.S., like not even getting into the global spirits that much yet. Yeah, it's been amazing.
Now, it's not just pouring out drinks, snorting them around a little bit and spitting them back out again. There's a lot of chemistry. There's a lot of having to figure things out. There's a lot of, you know, working through batches and stuff like that. You're doing this in a mobile environment now. That's obviously a wee bit trickier. What's like a plus to it, and what are the myriad minuses?
The plus, I think, is that, you know, I always have a changing scenery. I have the opportunity in these different cities where we go to make new friends. So I'll just look up, all right, what distilleries are around where we are now? Usually we're close to some big city. Normally, and Kevin, we'll talk about this, I'm sure, but normally he doesn't go to the major cities. He'll go to a small one near a major city. So, you know, usually there's a lot of cool places, if not right there in a very short drive. So making friends, I think, is the biggest perk. And the drawback, I think, like the logistical things, not having all of my stuff kind of in a dedicated spot. But that's getting ready to change with the mobile laboratory construction. It's a very small space to try and do work in, but then also like getting materials to me when we're constantly in motion. We're lucky we have a mail forwarding service that we can, you know, kind of default to. But if I need something quickly, I'm like, oh my gosh, can you like FedEx it tomorrow? Because we're heading to the next city.
So you talked about making new friends in new cities. You've got to be like the people everybody wants to be friends with. It's like, he runs the circus and she is a master distiller. Everyone's like, hell yes. Let's get them into our circle and have them over for dinner.
It's definitely a conversation starter.
It must be a little bit like people must ask you kind of the same questions over and over, though, and they probably want you to bring samples, right? Like when they invite you for dinner.
Well, yeah, if I bring something else, really anything I bring, they're like, did you make this? I'm like, no, I didn't make that one, but it's, you know, something that a friend of mine made, and it's really wonderful, and you should drink it anyway.
And they're like, oh. And they're so unimpressed. But now you're doing all this with a baby obviously in tow as well. So has that changed things for you? Like how are you work-life balancing, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yeah. So the first 8 months, you know, of Andy's existence, she was born March 13th, the day that the pandemic started. So the way that we interacted with her and as a family, I'm sure, is totally different than it would have been otherwise. But when we hit Buda, Texas, this last time around Thanksgiving, we found a really wonderful situation. This woman, Ellie, there, and her son Bennett, where she's a Montessori teacher, so she had some availability to take Andy at her place. And that was really perfect timing for me because I was kicking up with the final blending for Sweetens Cove. I had, you know, a lot of stuff hitting kind of at the same time. And my China whiskey distillery was just getting engaged, and they were like, all right, we want to start doing stuff now. Like, we got to make this real, and we want to launch in 2022. It seems like most of the folks that I'm working with are like, 2022, we're going to launch. So yeah, it was really wonderful because we had Andy with her. Kevin or I would take her there in the morning, and she would stay there all day so I could get some good work done, and Kevin could be productive as well. But
Chip says he thinks, you know, his friend Ethan Kelly, who he got to know at the Brandy Library in NYC. I don't know.
I would love to know Ethan, though.
Yeah, hook that up, Chip.
Well, I'm just getting into Brandy.
Oh, are you? Yeah. Oh, then you need to. So, Ethan Kelly.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought all the cool kids were doing gin. That's what I thought. You know, the next thing is after whiskeys, you go to gin. I thought there was a requirement.
There's an order.
Yeah.
Like you have to do it by... It's like a circus with an opening act, and then
maybe there's a fork in the road. It's gin or tequila. Is that possible? Because, you know, Rock and all those guys, Sammy Hagar, yeah, Mezcal, right? Right.
So we can see backstage. We can't hear it normally. This baby is beating Kevin up something.
We absolutely know who the ringmaster is in this household now. We'll get to that. We will. I do have another question, though. Even the way the New York Times wrote about you and everything I ever see covered about you, they always make it in sort of fairy tale terms. We sure did. Like, we want people to think, wow, join the circus. You know, it's a tricky bunch of choices. Like, for all of this actual freedom versus perceived freedom, all the actual freedom comes with a massive amount of taxes and a lot of choices and a lot of interesting arguments that don't happen in bigger houses and that sort of a thing. I've got to imagine that there's a small amount of caution you'd want to provide people before they think they're good enough to run off and join your circus.
They're good enough. You're not good enough for my circus. You're not my good whiskey enough. Circus.
That's right. You can't join. That's a song, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely like a security blanket that you will leave behind when, you know, you have your, this is my bank that I go to, and this is, you know, my grocery store that I always shop at, and the place where I get my coffee. You don't have those things when you're constantly moving around the country, but what you do get is a brand new family, because when Kevin assembles the team for the circus, he's not just thinking about the dynamics on the stage, but off the stage as well. He wants everybody to be a big family because it's a full year at least.
Being like a circus train with some people that you kind of don't like that much that you would avoid like in regular town.
Yep. Yep. We can imagine that.
Well, in watching the video, this is jumping ahead a little of the circus stuff, but in watching the video, I watched this scene where Kevin's dad is documenting the circus train back in the old days, in the Ringling days. And that train is like going around this massive curve. And I was like, it's easier to hate people when you get like 14 cars between you and them. But I bet it still feels kind of small. It's a different world. That's for damn sure. We have so many more questions for you. And then we want to bring in Kevin as well to talk about circus things. But the other thing I was thinking about was that as you're working on spirit consulting, I wonder, is there kind of a reverse word of mouth that happens? Because if you're the one who can make someone's spirit kick ass, don't they not want to say nice things about you so that you won't go off and like help their competitor? Or are there NDAs that you have to do, or like, you know, non-competes? What happens with that?
There are definitely NDAs, but I've tried to avoid and have successfully avoided so far non-competes. You know, it would be really hard for me to do my job if I couldn't, you know, work for more than one bourbon or more than one brandy, or, you know, so.
And at least in bourbon, coopetition seems to be the way. I mean, the whole, you know, the whole bourbon experience in Kentucky is, you know, make sure you come down the street and check out these guys and those guys. So
yeah, that's some good absolutely stuff.
You know, since I spoke with you, we met the custom cocktail person, Ramona Jackson, too, the bourbon bohemian. So now I'm thinking, you know, you really don't want to have non-compete agreements because you want to be able to have as many cocktail purveyors kind of as possible using your stuff.
100%. Yeah, it is a very congenial industry, and I think most people really embrace the sharing of information, especially behind the scenes in production. Maybe not so much in marketing, but
I want to point something out that no one can see because only Carrie and I could see it because we have monitor backstage. Is that not only is Kevin doing all this incredible parenting, but he's also keeping in frame the whole time on the odd shot that we go to him. It's going to be a perfect shot.
Only backstage footage I've ever seen. I mean, don't you wish you had a dad that worked for the circus? It's like, do, my kids were not that entertained.
When I'm live on the show, I don't see my frame sometimes.
Yeah, nice. Really nice. You should do that all the time. Oh, now you messed it up. Let's just keep it there. I want to see like your vacuum cleaner. Look at that. Even when everything's going fine, Chris finds a way to break it.
That was not worth a 6-second dumb joke.
Yep.
Oh, my life.
No. Yay. Elizabeth's going to stay the whole time. All we had to do was get a circus producer and a master distiller, and she'd stay the whole time. Hi, Nancy. Nancy from Scotland. Linda has Nancy never tasted bourbon. Oh, Marianne. Oh. We have a brand new person for you to convert.
How does that work? I know you must have done that. What's a first time tasting like?
It's really interesting. You know, I think different people have, I mean, everybody has a different taste and different palate, but I used to say, you know, drink it how you like it. So if you want to drink it in a cocktail, I'm not the bourbon purist that is going to tell you, no, you know, hell no, don't touch my whiskey. You know, I want people to start getting used to the flavors in any way that they enjoy it. And then you start, you know, I think naturally evolving into different ways of trying it. You might do a more boozy cocktail, which leads to on the rocks, which, you know, maybe it's a neat pour. Maybe you don't get there. Maybe you just love cocktails. It's everybody's unique preferences.
In my experience, a boozy cocktail leads to a really fun weekend and a disappointing Monday. So as you're going through these...
I might have just broke my own platform here.
Oh, you did? Okay. As you're going through these different cities, Marianne, are you finding... I mean, I know it's difficult with COVID to have events and stuff like that. So are you able to do anything, like kind of use the benefit of the fact that you're in town to do certain things? Like normally I'd say have a big tasting or something, but I realize, you know, in the current circumstances, that's maybe not the easiest thing.
I think eventually it definitely will, you know, especially get in touch with local media and that sort of thing. You know, once I have product in these different places, you know, meeting with bartenders and retail owners and restaurants and doing bourbon dinners and all those things that I used to do when I was working with Brown-Forman and some with Castle and Key. I think I'm really excited to start doing those things again.
I think we all are, right?
Right.
But in the meantime, I guess you could leave like little caches of exclusive spirits, you know, in the city here and there. Like, hey, we're the only one in the city that has this. Come get it.
Yeah,
it's gonna be gone, and she won't be back in for another, you know, however long. So,
little treasure hunt. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have one question before we grab our Kevin.
Our Kevin.
Your New York Times article was based on kind of a diary of your, you know, week's appointments and all that sort of a thing. I would have padded the hell out of that. I would have been like, you know, go fishing with Neil deGrasse Tyson, you know, whatever. I would have put in some stuff because mine would be so bad. How close to reality were we on that week?
That was exactly what happened. I didn't add anything extra in there. Yeah, so cool. I, you know, like I said, I was worried about it. Like the week before we started doing the journaling was the big ice storm in Texas. So I was like, this is going to be a weird one, you know, but they decided to hold off until everything thawed out and I could provide a more, you know, representative picture of the way my work goes.
Joanne wants to know what you actually do. So first of all, check out the New York Times spread.
Yeah, go but this last Sunday time.
Marianne's a master distiller, so she makes the spirits.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So I make the recipes and the processes and make sure it tastes good.
Make them better. Make sure all the good mashes are mashed the right mashy way. All those things.
Must make great baby food.
Right.
So exactly. Good at mashing things. Hello.
Now this might be our transition moment, though.
This is it.
We can grab Kevin. I'm gonna have to do ads later, but okay. You know, I'm gonna do that. Marianne, I'm gonna put you backstage for a minute. So
okay.
See you. Thank you.
Bye.
You're safe. All right.
No one's ever safe with you, you know.
Not really. I'm gonna mute her mic. I'm gonna grab Kevin
and meshing the right way.
Well, I guess I've asked Kevin to unmute. So you have to come off mute on your side.
I thought you guys were in charge of that. Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me.
That's a detail I don't like, by the way, Kevin. I don't like the detail that I can't unmute you.
You don't like that? You like
grumpy. I want the control.
When aren't you grumpy?
I'm always grumpy. Only on days that end in
one. Circus producer, a ringmaster here. There's nothing to be grumpy about.
You started this journey quite a little while ago, so much so that, you know, in Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey, God rest them, you were the youngest ringmaster. How do they decide what are the qualities you have to have? Because you have to have it all, don't you? You can't just be
showmanship,
a one trick pony. So what? How do you like apply for ringmaster?
Well, part of being successful is two very important things. Number one, you don't tell everybody everything you know. And
come on,
I can't tell you the second one because that would be.
I get it.
The point is that it's much more analog than maybe some big circus headlines would want you to believe. But that's part of the magic. I remember being on a train. Actually, amazingly, I'm in Colorado Springs right now, and it must have been in 2004. I was on the Ringling Brothers and Barnum Bailey Circus train, and we were meandering through one of the many little narrow passes that a rail line goes, a very different view of America from seeing on the interstate highways or at 35,000 feet. And we were going real slow. We passed by a one-room schoolhouse. I didn't know such things existed even then. But the entire contents of this little school were emptied out, and all of these little kids were looking up at this giant silver snail, I used to call the train because it was always so slow, but passing by, and it says Ringling Brothers and Barnum Bailey on the side of it. And I imagine what those kids must be thinking, what was going on inside that train, what kind of wonders and magic marvels there must be inside of that behemoth as it passed. And I think that is so much.
Uh-oh.
Illusion?
We froze for a second
back?
There.
Yes. Okay. Well, it's here today, and then it's gone. And that is part of that sort of vulnerability, that there's something that's timeless about it. There's something that's otherworldly about it. And I love giving people that magic. I discovered, however, in my own travels after leaving the show from, you know, just moving on to the next job, the contract ended. And by the way, how did I get that job in the first place? I fit the guy's clothes who was doing the role before me. That's really one of the main things. And I could sing, and I guess I looked somewhat the part, but that's all very subjective. I worked for other companies for a while before I discovered, hey, I'm going to run out of circuses to work for at some point here. And I love this. I love doing it. And I hate the idea that someone else could tell me that I don't have a job anymore. So I started a very arduous and ridiculous, I would say, journey. We started actually with a tiny fair show. I made a 30-minute show that I sold at the LA County Fair with a very fancy video that still sits at the center of our website, 1 minute, 16 seconds. It's a production musical video, basically a little piece of music. And I sang and we danced and we choreographed it. And I used that video to sell a circus that I did not own, that did not exist in reality. And all these years later, we took that dream, which first was a handful of fair dates, into, in 2019, 30 venues that we would tour over 46 weeks. All across the country, from Miami to Tacoma. And we stay for a couple of weeks in each city, and we really aim to make an emotional connection, just like Walt Disney wanted to, with the people that come in and see and experience this. Basically, it's 15 people who are not only the performers, but they're also the people who put up the tent. We have, in recent recent years, we've got a team that runs the concessions all on their own. So that's its own operation. But in the beginning, literally the people were, someone was just doing their aerial act and then coming down and making a nacho for somebody. And I've always aspired to make it excellent, even if it was small. And slowly through many painful moments, some of them financial, some of them, you know, learning to be a manager and a performer at the same time is a very, very difficult thing. It's very difficult to have people who have a really hard time with you being the ones that you need to look to and inspire to keep the audience and deliver that message like you want to. You know, and there's definitely lots of magic, but there's lots of tough days. But in the end, we made a circus where there wasn't one before. And we've also made it in a climate in a world where those big dogs seem to be falling off the map, and small businesses that care deeply about the people that they serve, the communities that they serve, I think have a chance of sustaining a long-term relationship and surviving into the future.
Why the circus instead of musical theater?
That's a very good question. And honestly, I would have chosen Broadway if I had gotten a job first. I wanted to be on Broadway. That was my initial goal. But looking back now, the performance is just one tiny aspect of it. The creating opportunities for other performers, the idea that I meet a community like St. Augustine. They welcomed us. This is a very highly tourism-driven community, and they have a really well-developed tourism board, which one of our first years there, we got a grant that gave us basically enough money to boost our marketing signal, didn't pay our costs, but it gave us a chance to get our word out, and we ended up connecting with that community, and when we get back this year, come hell or high water, it will be the first time we have been in a community for a fifth year. And what happens when you bring a show or an event back to a city for a fifth year, it's incredible. Because by then, people who weren't even in high school are now out of high school and in college. People who were, I don't know, there's kids that were just born and now they're 5 years old. I want to be that show, that magic, that when people with their children are seeing the show now, that one day this little company is going to keep going and it's going to be there for when that once was a child is grown up and has their own children. And that is when I know I will have succeeded with my dream.
So I have 1,000 questions. And one of the thoughts that I had was in 2009, I co-wrote a book with my friend, Julian Smith, and we wrote all about Cirque du Soleil. And the reason we wrote about Cirque du Soleil was because the idea behind it was just to strip out a certain set of essences and change the model, the business model of circus. Theirs was no cheap concessions, no real animals, very high production, very high ticket. And so that's how they made Cirque du Soleil. Ringling Brothers, you couldn't help but collapse on itself because of the overhead, all the expense, all the moving parts, and then the changing times and perceptions and all that. You, when you decide to make the Varnardo Circus, what are the elements, what are the ingredients, the ones you feel like you want to share, that you feel have to be there to be the circus experience you want people to have? What has to be and what doesn't have to be in your circus?
Kevin might be frozen.
I'm Kevin, here. Or, am I back now?
You're, we can hear you. There you are.
Can you see me? Okay.
Yes.
Sorry. Welcome to the modern age.
It's okay. You can always pop into the kitchen if you need to.
Did you hear the question okay, or do I need to repeat that for you?
Because there was a big ramp up, Kevin. Right.
Did you happen to hear the question, or did I lose any of that?
What are the ingredients of the Bernardo Circus?
I heard your question, and then it went away.
Okay.
Thank you for your
patience. Now we're ready.
Number one, it's excellent broadband. That's the number one ingredient. No, honestly, the number one ingredient for me is intimacy. The size of our tent, it seats 400 people, which to many might sound like quite a few people, but with a stage in the center, that's raised stage, it allows the show to have pretty much chair seating all the way around, and that everyone gets an excellent view of the stage. But no one is more than like 30 feet away from the performers that are right in front of them. Many people are much.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy. a cat just touched my hand.
Oh, cats okay. are the worst. Oh, wow.
We're back now.
That looks really cool.
Or the best, depending on who you're asking. This is Mau Mau over here. Intimacy. I said before, but it bears repeating, an emotional connection that we seek to make with people. From the moment that they arrive at the box office, the experience that they have interacting with that person, to the usher that takes them to their seat, to the person that's delivering popcorn to them, I want all of those connections to be something that they feel proud of sharing with their families. I also want them to be able to feel like they're having a great time on a date. This is not a just for kids show. This is an excellent theatrical circus in an intimate space. And then the other bedrock hallmark is that we have these musical numbers that are the sort of anchor points of the show. There's a big opening musical number, and there's a big finale number. Sometimes there's a ballad in there, a little musical interludes. But that element of Broadway, that feeling of the theater and storytelling with the music, has been something that people have really reacted to. You know, as I move onward with this dream, I realize that what I want maybe was a starting point, and maybe it influences my aesthetic. But the most important thing is that I wish that the circus delivers joy to people. And to do that, it has to do it in a language that people are, not that I'm afraid of challenging people, but I suppose I do it in little ways. I want them all to feel welcome. I've been delighted, and it has been my aim to bring people of every stripe and sort and thought into that tent. People on the red team, on the blue team, people riding donkeys, riding elephants. I mean, we don't have any animals in our show, but you know what I mean. The world has been filled with a polarization for certainly through the evolution, the birth of this circus. I want people who are dramatically different in perhaps their points of view to after a two and a half hour period experience to walk away feeling a little bit closer to those people that they just spent the time with, and maybe seeing a little bit more hope that if we work together, which is the example that I presented them with, this group of 10 artists on the stage, 15 people making the whole thing happen, all of whom are from different parts of the world, speak different languages. They think very, very differently. Just get them in a room and give them a couple of drinks and you'll see what happens. And yet, because we are so passionately dedicated to delivering this experience, we make it happen. We work through all those problems. We get through it, and we also, in the end, we know that we need each other to make that experience. At the beginning of this conversation, you mentioned something about leaving some space between you and some of the performers on the train car. I think it is the things that make us different, that make us under certain lenses and lights, really like oil and water. They are the very things that create a compelling performance. They are the very things that make a product sparkle and shine and give it all kinds of amazing qualities, because all those different people added their mark in there. And you know, we're just like, America is such a diverse, sometimes crazy child or children that are just arguing that we're so young compared to other parts of the world. And I think that's a beauty, because that plays out in full sight, just like at the circus. All the good,
but I'm not
the
trying
bad,
to hop real. On a train with those people, Kevin. Like, they live on their side. I live on my side.
Fair enough.
I don't want to like.
Fair enough. You don't have to. Well, if you're a patron, you're just coming for 2 hours, and you can look in, and then you can leave. It's like you're the uncle of the circus. You get to come in, and then you give it right back to its parents.
Nice.
Sweet.
You know, you mentioned this earlier, and I just want to go back just for a minute, because there is a really a big challenge compared to what you were doing, and I'm sure you had to go through this. There's a difference between being an incredible entertainer and performer, and there's a difference between being that and a boss, and like having to say to someone, look, you know, I'm only bringing you here for these 6 shows, and you've already missed, you know, you're not on time for these 3 shows.
Or I know already. You ran away to join the circus, but
whatever, you know, like we know even from our own show that the more crazy the performer is, the less reliable they are on time and things like that. You know what I mean? We had a burlesque person who basically he said yes, and then he said, well, what could you expect? I'm a burlesque person. And we're like,
He overslept.
So I guess what I'm saying is to be a boss.
Maybe he became a burlesque performer just so he could be lazy or use that right. excuse. I don't think right, that's right. So. I think 11. That I met people of every stripe. Maybe. But people who I want to work with, people who I think are able to sustain a career over a long period of time, they have to be dedicated. And I guess there's crazy examples of people who defy the odds, but often they are people who run their own businesses and maybe have worked hard in one degree. And so they have this revenue stream or they have this thing going on. So maybe in other interactions, they don't need you so much. I don't mean just this show, but I definitely have worked with all kinds of folks. And I try mightily when I have my first conversations asking people if you know, we want to work together. One of the first things I want to say is forget about this job for a minute. Just tell me, what do you really want to do? Like, what's your dream? I get into a little more in-depth if it's a person we're going to go on tour with as opposed to doing a one-off event. But the tour is really my passion, which has made this time so difficult. The tour is where you become an ensemble where all of the things, the work and the movement of this machine that is the circus, get it sorted out after the first 100 shows, maybe 200 shows. And then beyond that, you are no longer wasting energy thinking about what you need to do next. And instead, you're just enjoying the audience and that it's flowing through you like that. So that's where I aim to get. So of course, if you're living and working with people with that kind of intensity for that amount of time, I want them to be people that I like and that also get along with me, you know? Andy's yeah, also like involved in the conversation.
If you were going to do a video show with somebody every day, they'd have to be somebody you really like. Get it.
Oh, yeah. Get it. Oh, yeah. It's been absolutely a learning curve, and I've made what I would look back on as mistakes. Many of the mistakes are, here's one I've learned, is I have a sense of duty and honor in my heart. I make a commitment to somebody on a contract or an agreement. I feel extremely strongly about that, especially because there are families that come out here with me. They've made an investment in RV, a trailer. They come and be with me. But I've learned also that to put language in the agreements now. So if things don't work, that there's a way for us to move forward amicably. And in any language, any agreement I sign with somebody, we all look through it. We all come to terms with it before we sign our name on the bottom. So, but just understanding that if a relationship is not working, sticking with it, not to a degree. I mean, when I say sticking with it, I stick with things for a long time. That's maybe a tragic flaw even. But there are times when you need to let go of things that are not working or there needs to be consequences in some ways to not doing the thing you promised to do if you're a contractor. That sounds like a threatening tone, perhaps. And I say that only because of the language I put in there. In practice, I'm a cream puff, and I want to treat people like my family. I want them to feel like they're part of a family. And if you look at our visa bill at the end of a month, I mean, we go out for drinks, we go out for dinners, we do things together. Running a circus is not an inexpensive endeavor, even a small one, but for me, it's extremely satisfying, extremely worth it, because I'm doing two of my favorite things, making jobs for my fellow artists, which I love. I love smearing in the face of that sort of idea that you can't do something, you can't be an artist, that it's a stupid idea, go do something more sensible. I've hated that notion that's been driven to me by other people who are fearful of their own lives, that haven't had the courage to go and follow their dreams. Some of them very well-meaning and people I love, some of them my own family at times. I love defying that odd. And I also love bringing communities together for the circus and then going back for year 3 and 4 and to see how those people, it's just the most awesome thing when you make something that didn't exist before become an event that is important to people. I love that.
It's a big
part.
Thing. We're going to grab one Marianne Eves back. Annette, thank you for coming by, and I'm glad you're going to get a chance to watch it. And Kat says she's cheering over there. It's a huge story. So we're going to
grab was your family that. Like, come on, Kevin, just be a dentist or something?
No, because I'll tell you, I'm going to speak for Kevin, because Kevin's dad and he shared a love of H scale trains. They shared a lot of love and creativity, and his dad had an incredible career in media and did some incredible work, you know, doing sort of a grown up day job where he could sneak his creativity in and he could get really cool, interesting shots into a piece and did some storytelling. He's got a very, I don't know anything about your mom, but your dad is someone quite to admire from when I looked and did some research on his history. You have a lot on your shoulders, pal, but you seem to be making it work. So, all right, don't all cry or nothing. I'm grabbing my
hand. I will always walk in his shadow. Thank you. Thank you. Good to do that. Thank you.
Hi, Marianne. You're muted again, which is probably good.
No, you stop it. You bring her out just to look at
that. The whole purpose.
All right, I'm going to turn everybody's names off because I want to look at that baby.
It's like Mike Wazowski over there. So
I was on the backpack show.
You have to bring this energy into that trailer sometimes. So your bad day at work, Marianne, your bad day at work, Kevin, are quite different bad days at work. In one, you know, Marianne might be saying, look, I'm telling this person, this is why you hired me. I've got all this experience. Would you listen to me every now and again? And I don't know what Kevin's conversation, I don't know what Kevin's version of that would be like, but I imagine it's kind of like, you know, I can't believe this person said no after we just spent 5 weeks doing some other stuff. What's it like? What's the storyline about the, how do you rock, paper, scissors your way through living in that small space right now?
You know, there's definitely been separate dramas in our respective careers. And, you know, I ask him for advice sometimes and he'll ask me for advice. And, you know, we also have confidants outside the relationship, which is helpful and give an outlet for some of that stress. But, you know, we're different people. I think I can compartmentalize my energy and emotion maybe a little bit better than Kevin can. She's going to keep crying. We're both on, so.
Yeah, she was also in the kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah, there's never been a time where we're like, well, I'm going to hang out over here and not look at you for a few hours. It's just a small space and you know, we both exist here and, you know, it's kind of impossible to run away to the garage or.
You do right. Though, kind of, right? Well, you have like a thing. Lab on that's wheels.
Or he'll just go hang out in the tent sometimes, but you know, there's, it's a different, definitely a different type of dynamic that I had never been used to, that, you know, you just have to work through things and you have to try and come together instead of pulling apart, which is what Kevin always says.
Now, some people don't watch your Instagram as closely as I do, so they might
not
know.
That's not creepy at all.
They might not know that there's even more Family Matters coming about sometime soonish. That's going to be crazy.
Yeah. We're really excited about it.
So, circus babies.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
Either building the, yeah, we're either creating the lineage for the next master distiller or the future of the circus. Maybe both.
Maybe both. Yeah, why not? Right. I mean, I am here for it. I'll tell you that much. This is chaos and I love it. Everybody loves the baby. Kevin's like, I know.
I want to buy the domain like drunkringmasters.com.
No, the ringmaster can't be drunk. Everybody else maybe. Everybody watching for sure can, but not the ringmaster. They got to keep stuff like, they got to keep it on the rails. I feel like.
Wow. We're going to have to see if we can make it through the.
All right. Here's what we should do. Kevin, you should go sit with Marianne. Just forget it.
We're bumping you out.
Come sit with Marianne.
Go sit with Marianne.
Although she's got a headset on. So she'll have to repeat our question like Sigourney Weaver in Galaxy Quest. Oh, look, a whole circus family.
A whole family.
Yay.
There must be nap time coming soon. I mean, my nap time's coming soon.
No, I think that baby's going to go all day. Oh, are they? Now we can't hear them. Hold on.
Oh, there we go. You might have to change your audio.
Or just unmute. I can't unmute you because your mic's not connected. Sorry. Oh, there we go.
There we go.
So I feel like there's nothing that this baby, when she grows up, could tell you she wants to do with her life that would shock or disappoint you. Is that correct? She'll be like, I
want to be a politician. Listen here, young lady. Maybe. Your hair better be five colors.
That's it. So has there ever been a time where somebody has asked to run away with the circus? Like, I feel like there's probably people watching that have dreamed about it and given the opportunity would actually love to do it. So what makes somebody like the right fit to join the circus? Besides talent, let's assume that there's talent.
We put on a show. We have performances, and I'm usually looking to each artist to be delivering two different acts. So right off the bat, to just say, I want to join the circus, say, well, what do you want to do? What do you do? What are you passionate about? The people that I'm looking for are definitely performers, but they're people who are willing to do whatever else is necessary to get the tent up, to run across town and grab something, to do PR of all sorts, whose vision is in line with mine, at least to the extent that's necessary for us to endure, hopefully like each other, and most of all, to deliver an exceptional experience to the people who come and see the show. They've also got to be willing to drive a truck and trailer. Whoever I might hire as a performer, basically I pay them a weekly salary, and inside of that, they need to get themselves from this venue to the next one and also provide their own living arrangements, which could be whatever you wish for as a performer or a person. But generally speaking, that means an RV is going to be the thing that you're going to want to have because you're going to want a shower and live
ideally,
and have your own space.
Right?
So,
can you just hose them down?
Yeah.
Come on.
Well...
Come on out.
I want to. Yeah, so you can have your own truck and trailer, your own rig. You've got to have a can-do attitude, and you have to be bringing something to the table as far as a performer. Sometimes up until now, we really are a very small group, which has kept our lines tight. And it means also that I need to ask three or four jobs of each one of those people. So the person. Yes. The
yeah,
area list
right?
is also. Tickets at the front box office before the show. Oh, that's Andy. And here we go. Andy just reached up with a trackpad. See, it doesn't stop here at the circus. But
it really doesn't.
Amazing. We love her.
She's going to grow up to be a ringmaster. So I can tell.
She's an extrovert, you think? I think, yeah. The other day. She definitely is chatty. We're working on some words.
I have it on good authority that bourbon and Cheerios go really
another thing. Send a video. Don't just send an email that says, I want to be in the circus, and it doesn't even have your phone number or any video link. Send me, if you're a performer, send me something that is an actual act, front to top to bottom, not an edited thing that has all of your clips from your things, just one act from beginning to end with all the warts and all. Because that's what you're going to do in performance and do it to a piece of music. And send it to info@venardoscircus.com.
And put casting everybody.
Now we're at this part of our show. We have some things.
Now we're getting in.
And here's our person of the day. Kaboom!
Send your video.
There we go.
Thank you. That was smooth. Look at that. You were so fast.
I know. I could join the circus and like type things for you guys. Cause sometimes
you're doing marketing.
An official circus typer.
But, I mean, you were up to your head.
I'm a master typist.
What? Master typist? Where are you from?
Cape Cod.
Okay. Awesome.
So here we go. Here's our person of the day. It's going to be Robert Collins for his Now I See Where Those Extra Set of Teeth Came From comment. Quite earlier.
That was you getting really close to the camera.
That was when I smacked my face in. Oh,
yeah. But I'm on my third city, Kevin. I'm in Nashville now. I like move around too. So, you know.
awesome.
But yeah, so you got really close to the camera and we could see, you know, your teeth. And so that's when Bob was like,
I just smacked my mouth on the lens.
Oh, Kat's going to join the circus.
Cool. I'll visit you there.
Your dad says you and your brother knew someone personally whose goal was to become a clown in the circus, and he succeeded in his desire years before Barnum and Bailey's went out of business.
Yeah, that was the guy I was talking about earlier, Robert, when we were off air. All right, so we did our person of the day. We have one question to ask. We've asked Marianne this question, but you have a chance to refresh your answer. This question we've asked every single guest, which is, what goes in your backpack? It could be something physical. It could be something metaphorical. It's kind of a brief answer, half of a tweet even. But it could be something physical, like what?
Don't make me say it. Second set of teeth,
I guess. Come on. I guess that's the one. Or it could be something metaphorical, like what, Carrie?
Like kindness.
Kindness. You get at least two votes because of all of you in that screen. Marianne, you tell us first, what goes in the backpack for you this episode?
Oh, no.
I think I said
courage. Oh, you were thinking. I thought you were muted again. I was like, oh, no.
We hear you.
Definitely courage is something that I think you should always take with you. You know, you're not always going to feel brave, but no, just knowing that things that feel risky, like running away with the circus, can often be amazing adventures and lead to things like New York Times articles. So, yeah, I've just been really grateful for this adventure and to have had the courage to kind of take the leap and do something incredible.
Kevin Vernardis, what goes into your backpack?
A top hat. Seemed obvious. I have a little model of when we first started doing my little show, we used a tiny tent. I said tiny, it was 10 foot by 20 foot. So it was not big enough to put the audience inside, but the performers could hide in there, and it was sort of a staging area. And the audience was either sitting on hay bales or leaning over a steel rail, depending on what kind of fair it was. But this was the way that it was in the beginning, and it was so small. The idea that you can be small and that you can make a huge impact in the world. And so having that little bitty tent nearby, it's also about how dreams can begin so small, like Andy here. And they can grow and echo out if you just feed them love. It's like the wolves, you know, those wolves that are inside of you. I have, and I know Marianne has too, inside of her, a willfulness. And sometimes the fuel that we rely on is that, I don't want to speak for you, Marianne, but I'll speak for myself. The fuel that at many points in my life I've relied on has been when someone or some situation has told me that I can't do something. And that willfulness maybe manifests in like a anger or even hate doesn't go very far. But love, that is something. It might take longer to take root. You might also feel like you're getting beat up a lot. But if you keep doing the thing that you love and you keep treating the people that you work with and your customers, the audience, with love, and you don't give up on them, there is absolutely no limit to how far you can take that dream, the size of the impact and positive impact too. Well, why are we doing this? Not just to have an impact, but to make the world a better place, more joy. So a little tent, a top hat, and maybe a little bit of bourbon. I suppose I'd keep that around for sure.
Sounds like a good plan to me.
If it's a magic hat, you put everything in the hat and then you don't even need the backpack.
Like, exactly.
That's true.
Right on. That's true. I'd ask Andy, but I don't know. I have a sense of, you know, something to smash with or something to
smash. Something to put in my mouth.
Great. Something to chew on. Yeah, they give me a trackpad so I can put someone's screen over to the side in the middle of their call. That's good.
Oh, right. Those cheeks are smashable.
Oh, no, this. Well, sorry. That reminds me of my grandmother's secret of how to make babies not cry. And it might involve Marianne's previous work. So
oh, yeah.
I could tell you, here's what she might have done.